Hi, everyone, and welcome to Leadership Beyond the Trenches. I'm your host, Anne Reifenstein, and this week we're going to have an episode where we talk about ethics, particularly leadership at the institutional level and ethics. This is always a challenge to make interesting, and it's always a challenge to engage people. Most people roll their eyes and kind of go, ugh, ethics, because probably usually they've been involved in mandatory training or they find moral philosophy really not terribly interesting or don't have a great deal of background on it. So in this episode, I'm hoping to give you a quick overview of some moral reasoning frameworks so you have the vocabulary to talk about problems. And we're going to go into one of my favorite philosophical problems, which is, would you kill the fat man? So stick around for this next episode where we talk about, would you kill the fat man? A couple of years ago, I was teaching a course on ethics to mid-career military professionals, and one of my students asked me why. Why do we have a course on ethics at this point? Isn't it too late? If we are unethical at this point in our careers, isn't it too late to teach us to be ethical? And the answer I came up with, I kind of stumped for a little bit, but the answer I came up with, I'd still stick by. And that is that it's not about teaching leaders to have ethics. You know, one would hope if you've gotten to senior levels of leadership at an institution, then you likely already have a really robust ethical framework that you're adhering to. Instead, courses and discussions about ethics are about teaching leaders the vocabulary to have those discussions with their peers and their subordinates and their superiors. So there's a common understanding of language and there's a common understanding of framework in order to discuss and to rationalize ethical dilemmas and ethical decisions. And I think that's really important. And that is why we're going to look at the trolley problem. And the hook is for that, would you kill the fat man? This is the question that's at the heart of the trolley problem, or as some will call it, trolleyology. The trolley problem is a philosophical thought experiment by Philippa Booth, an Oxford philosopher that was published in an article in 1967 and has been expanded on exponentially over the years. There's a million variations of it, but one version, and what I think is the principal version of the problem, goes like this. You're standing on a bridge over some trolley train tracks. You notice that a trolley has lost control and is careening down the tracks. It will pass under the bridge, and then it will hit five workers who are working on the track. The workers can't hear you or be alerted to the danger posed by this out-of-control trolley. But you notice on the bridge next to you a large man who, if you pushed him, would land on the tracks, and he's big enough to stop the trolley. You aren't. And then you could save the five workers. The question is, would you kill the fat man to save the five workers? This thought problem's been used to illustrate moral reasoning frameworks, and in discussing the question, we can illustrate why a decision is ethically justified or not. It's important to distinguish the difference when we are having discussions about right and wrong actions or outcomes. The difference between what is considered ethically justifiable and what is legal. There can be significant overlap. For example, if we use the doctrine of double effect, then the intention behind the act matters in that we intended to do something morally justified, but there were unintended consequences. So in the trolley problem, my act was morally justified. This is intended to save the five workers by pushing the fat man off the bridge. But I'm just getting a bit ahead of myself here. So let's do a quick overview of moral reasoning and philosophies, mostly Western-based, well, almost all Western-based. So we're speaking a common language. There are three main buckets that moral philosophies can be gathered into. The first is the consequentialist bucket, and that's where the morality of the act is located in the outcome. This is about trying to achieve the greatest good for the greatest number of people. In the trolley problem, the question, would you kill the fat man? The saving of five lives is a greater good than the saving of one. That would be a morally justified act. Some of the other consequentialist frameworks are The Egoist Approach by Hobbes, where you choose the action that produces the greatest good for yourself. That is the Hobbesian approach. And also there's a common good approach from Rousseau, where the best society should be guided by the will of the people, which would then produce what is best for all people as a whole. The next bucket we're going to talk about are the categorical frameworks. And this is where the morality of the act is located in duty and responsibility. It's about the act itself. So the duty approach, or deontological, was proposed by Immanuel Kant, where the ethical action is one taken from duty. That is, it's done precisely because it's an obligation to perform the act. Ethical obligations are the same for everyone. So in the case of the trolley problem, the killing of the fat man could not be morally justified, as killing is inherently wrong as an action, regardless of its saving others. Another framework in this bucket is John Locke's rights approach, where the best ethical action is that which protects the ethical right of those actions. As well, there's Rawls' fairness or justice approach, and can't disregard Kierkegaard's divine command, where what is right is the same as what God commands, and the ethical standards are the creation of God's wills. The final bucket that we're going to take a look at in moral reasoning frameworks is the agent-centered theory. And the primary theory within this is Aristotle's virtue ethics. And virtue ethics is concerned with the entirety of a person's life, that it takes the education and training as a process and emphasizes the importance of role models to understand and conduct ethical deliberations. It's worth mentioning at this point, I've just talked only about Western-based philosophies, but there are many, 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 many other views. Eastern philosophy has Confucianism, which sets out virtues and ethical standards to aspire to and as models to make decisions from. As you've probably figured out, I am not an expert in any of these areas, so this is just a brief overview into moral frameworks. You know, I talked briefly before about the doctrine of double effect, and it's called the doctrine of double effect because the twin effects of the same action, the one that's aimed at and the other that's foreseen but not intended. The distinction in between intending and foreseeing is at the core of the doctrine of double effect. I talk about this because the doctrine of double effect is built into the law, medical practice, and into the rules of war, if you will. So with respect to intention, it's basically the direct or purposeful intention vice an oblique attention. The doctrine of double effect stems from the thinking of Thomas Aquinas, a 13th century monk who drew up the principles to describe war as just. He indicated in his writing that intentional killing cannot be justified, but if the person was threatened and the only option was to kill the assailant, then this killing could be morally permissible, provided the intention was self-preservation and not taking of life. So how does this apply to institutional leaders? I like the phrase that Colonel Todd Strickland did in one of our conversations that we had.
You know, there's an expression that many have used in the past, that the standard you walk by is the standard you accept. So if you're putting out the standard you accept with your daily interactions, and whether it be uniform wear or how you're acting with people, that's what gets picked up. And I think that's as true at the lowest levels as it is at the highest.
I couldn't agree with Colonel Strickland more on this one, because I've seen it throughout my career. You know, it's basically leaders have a tacit setting of the standards. They may not explicitly say something's okay or not okay, but by accepting it or not intervening with it, they're essentially saying this is aligning with our organization's cultures and values. The idea of leaders, institutional leaders, being role models for ethics and values of an organization came up when I was talking with Brigadier General Quinn. She's the Canadian Formation Europe commander, and she was talking about, we were talking about traits and ideas, but the value of integrity and how important it is for institutional leaders to role model that.
I think that integrity is a huge one. You know, I mentioned it before as something that we expect in our military members. And I think that, you know, leaders need all the way through their career to be able to understand that their integrity is always being watched. It's always being modeled. And people notice. People notice when your actions are inconsistent with your words. And we talk about integrity a lot. And so I think you see, you know, in very senior leaders, you know, with notable exceptions probably, which hit the news sometimes, but the grand majority, integrity, I think, is one of those things that you can really point to. I think also the ability to exercise good judgment, which maybe those things go hand in hand, but you know, somebody who can take the ball of wool and make a decision that knits the sweater. Your seniors need to depend on you to use that good judgment.
This role modeling is critical to the shaping of organizational culture. Institutions frequently have values baked into their company's public statements, their websites, and who we're about and how they describe themselves. They have an ethos that is explicitly articulated through posters on values, codes of conduct, of the ethos that's involved with the organization. And all of these things are about explicitly articulating what the values and ethos of your organization are. They're usually delivered to employees during onboarding or as part of a training and education of new recruits in an institution. In most organizations, you'll have a mandatory workshop or review where you review the ethics and go through scenarios of how you apply those ethics in that situation. Now, why is this of value? Like my student said, if you're not ethical, how can this training or this onboarding or this ethical review make a person ethical? Well, I don't think it does, but a behavioral economist called Danielle Ariely conducted research on honesty for his book, which is a favorite of mine, called The Honest Truth About Dishonesty. And this research revealed that most people are motivated to act dishonestly if they can rationalize their actions. Everybody does it. No one cares. I just saw the boss doing exactly the same thing. And their ability to see themselves also as a good person can motivate or rationalize their ability to act dishonestly. His research also showed that when people read an ethos or a list of values, they were less likely to act dishonestly, even if it was based on a belief system that they didn't buy into. In an experiment that he conducted, he had atheists who recited the Ten Commandments, and they ended up acting a little bit more honestly during the course of the experiment than those that didn't. So the conclusions that were drawn from that behaviors and from multiple other experiments is that having an explicit code of conduct and modeling the desired behaviors and actions are key to ensuring that the organization reflects the values and ethics desired. So this is where the vocabulary of moral decision-making is so important to an institutional leader. Because there will be times when certain actions or outcomes appear to be in conflict with the values and norms of the institution. So if you have a moral reasoning framework to analyze and ethically justify or not justify, it's important to ensuring that the organization culture remains on the desired ethical track. What you do directly reflects on your organization. So to answer the question, would you kill the fat man? Well, there's any number of ethical frameworks that could justify the decision, and there's any number of ethical frameworks that could condemn the decision. And as Chidi, a philosophy professor on the sitcom The Good Place, which is on Netflix, who is trying to teach ethics and morality to others so they can stay in the good place, Chidi says, there's no right answer to the trolley problem, to which his students responded, and that's why people hate philosophy professors. Anyways, I hope this shallow dive into the realm of ethics and leadership has been helpful. There are endless resources to tap into to talk about ethical decision making. There's tons of the explanation videos on YouTube, and Stanford's Encyclopedia of Philosophy is where I drew a lot of the definitions from. But one of my favorite resources is David Edmund's book. He published it in 2014, and it's titled, no surprise, Would You Kill the Fat Man? The Trolley Problem and What Your Answer Tells Us About Right and Wrong. It's an excellent book that is entertaining and dives into both the theory and the application of the trolley problem. And if you're interested in the trolley problem, it gives unlimited variations. It also talks a little bit about the neuroscience involved in ethical decision making. I really recommend this as a good read. If you get a chance, it's definitely worthwhile and really contributed to my understanding of the trolley problem. So thanks for joining me on this episode about leadership and ethics, and I hope you give thought to would you kill the fat man and why or why not. I'd like to thank Colonel Todd Strickland and Brigadier General Darlene Quinn for chatting with me about institutional leadership. I hope you'll join me again on Leadership Beyond the Trenches. Leadership Beyond the Trenches is hosted and produced by Anne Reifenstein, and music is brought to you by Mikhail Hallman and Alexander Nekarandov under Creative Commons licensing.